Hello, welcome to the photo show. Yes, two photo shows in 2 weeks. It's a new record, potentially. I think some from back from when we even started, maybe. Who knows? Joining me, no one. It's just me on my own doing all the stories of the week. So let's not mess around. Let's kick off straight away with the news. So varied news stories today. Loads of stuff to talk about. First one is Esther McVeigh. She is an MP here in the UK, and she's been running for Tory party leader. And this is probably only a story because of that more than anything else. I'm sure other MPs have done the same thing. But she has had a photographer. She hired a personal photographer to follow her around and take pictures of her. And he put in a bill, £8,750 for photography services to Esther McVeigh. I've got a decent day rate, but I'm not that high. And she's claimed it on her expenses. So there's a bit of a furore about this. How could she claim that much for just a photographer? The guy in question was Jonathan Farber. And he used to show, he went round showing Esther doing stuff with some paddleboarders and a campaign against plastic pollution from them. And she also went to a Women Institute event and he went and photographed that as well. So there's other stuff, I think. It's not just two events. Nothing illegal's happened. No one's done anything wrong. Esther's not going to prison. But it's not for her own promotion either. It wasn't used in the Tory battle. It was all about her role as an MP. And expenses for communication are a valid expense. Seems a bit excessive, but it's legal. Well done, Esther. While we're still on the subject of politicians, an absolutely harsh response to one guy. This guy is a regional minister, Shakoot Yousafzai. He is a regional minister in Pakistan, and he decided to hold a press conference and go out on Facebook Live. Unfortunately for him, someone switched on the cat face filter, and the video was sent out to everybody. It wasn't just him. There was a few others who got snagged as well as, and he was asked for a quote because the video was taken down very quickly as it happened. But being the internet as it is, everyone had copied it already. So they took it down. They didn't take it down fast enough. His comment was, "I wasn't the only one. Two other officials were also hit by the cat filter." Now, the tone of that sounds to me like he had a bit of a laugh about it. And if he did, good on him, because there's too many politicians are sat doing stuff with their fingers up their arses. Well done, Yousef, if you were having a little bit of fun at yourself. Good lad. Where do you buy your photographic equipment from? Because NASA have started selling photo equipment. Yes, you can buy photo equipment from NASA. The thing that they use tools, these are things that they use to take pictures of distant stars. So you get out your astronomical telescope that's floating around in space. I didn't say that you'd be buying it off them, but they are selling it if you want it. They make tools called flags. And what the flag does is it blocks errant light from stars so that they can potentially see planets that are circulating around the stars, but they've made a new one called a star shade. Here's a picture of the star shade deployed, and it's got an astronomical telescope right next to it. Now, that's not a very representative of what actually happens here, because this thing can be positioned to an accuracy of 2 millimeters in relation to the telescope that's taking the picture of the distant star, which is mega impressive. It's really, really impressive. In space, a 2 millimeter tolerance for a telescope. Superb. But this is where it gets really even more astonishing. This telescope is not right next to the sunshade like it is there, because it'd see bugger all. Don't forget, it's going into great long distances. The star shade is 25,000 miles away in space, and it's positioned to a tolerance of 2 millimeters. That blew my mind. I thought that was really, really cool. It's a large expandable structure, so it opens out, and I've got a picture here, look, and the idea is it obscures the glow from the sun, and you can see the planets circulating around it then with the new telescopes that they've got. When's it available? No price, no date, so it won't be at CES next year then. Now then, can you... I forgot to put the picture up. Bugger. Right, moving on then. I'll do that next week. It's a thing about that makes pictures come alive. I'll do it next week. This one, it's now illegal to fly your drone drunk in Japan. I've been practicing that line all afternoon. if you've got a drone in Japan, you can no longer go out and fly it if you've had a bit of tipple. And if you crash it, or if they find you, they can breath test you. And the penalties go from 300,000 yen, which you all suck in at and go, oh, but actually that's about $2,750. But you can get prison sentences for it as well. There's a whole pile of stuff that they've listed out that you can't do. You must fly in the daytime without a license, and so no night flights and cool nighttime shots. You must have a visible line of sight. If you haven't, then you're knackered, and that includes the distance that the thing is from you. You can't fly anywhere near a building, a person, or a car within 30 meters of it, otherwise you're in breach of it. You can't go over where there's an event. You can't go over a public highway. You can't drop items off from it. So parcel delivery potentially is outlawed. And you can't transport hazardous substances using the drone. So I think that's probably getting people into prisons and stuff like that. So it's pretty draconian. But like I say, there is prison sentences associated with it. Be prepared, because I think something like this may follow in the UK. All well and good. But now that means it's time for the gear. What's going on with the gear then? Lenses mostly. There's an awful lot of lenses come out, and an awful lot from Hasselblad this week, which is looking cool. First thing then is the Tamron 35mm lens. It's a fixed lens, prime lens, from Tamron. It's only made for Nikon and Canon though. So if you're shooting something else, a Sigma, Olympus, a Sony, any of those kind of stuff, this isn't going to fit you. You're only going to get one or the other. It's 14 elements in 10 groups, 4 low dispersion elements with to avoid chromatic aberration. Lovely open lens at f1.4. That made me sit up a bit and think, oh, this isn't bad. I wonder what the price is. 35mm lens, it's good. It's great for shooting landscapes and stuff like that and going out. And you can still even shoot portraiture, although you're quite close with it. When do you want it? Well, if you want the Nikon version, you can get it at the end of June. If you want the Canon version, you've got to wait till the end of the July. And here's the rub. It is £929. How do you feel about that? I think that's not bad. That's a pretty good price for a lens like this. I'm sure it's going to be very good quality. Tamron makes some decent stuff. So I think that could be good buy. Maybe a little bit cheaper, but I'll take that. That's okay. It's fine. Hasselblad have released a lens. Yes. And Hasselblad have said, this is the best lens we've ever made. Just like Apple. I think they're learning from Tim Cook. Sorry if you can hear Muller crunching on his crisps in the background. This new lens is coming out from Hasselblad. It's a 35 to 75mm lens, f3.5 to f4.5. So it can go fairly wide and then close right down. So you can use it for landscape and portrait as well. It's been designed so that you can reduce the amount of lenses that you carry around with your Hasselblad, which is good. And that will become more apparent when we talk about it in a second, because if you look very closely here, this looks like it's on a camera that doesn't look like a Hasselblad, but it's got Hasselblad written on it. We'll be talking about this camera in a minute. It's got an internal focusing system, so that means that there's not going to be a barrel shooting out and forwards. It won't change its physical size. So that's a good thing. And Per Nordlund said it's the best lens we've ever made. Brilliant. It's out in October, and it's just the lens. There's no body that comes with it. And the lens will cost you £5,175 for just the lens. That's pricey. It is pricey. It's well pricey. But I have to say, Hasselblad stuff is, you know, you wouldn't catch me buying Leicas with someone else's money. I don't think they deliver a bang for buck, as I've always said. But if I had the money no object, would I buy a Hasselblad? In a heartbeat. There is no question I would get a Hasselblad. I'd love a medium format camera, and I'd love all the lenses that go with it. It is not a vanity purchase, what am I trying to say? It is a very special purchase for me, most definitely. £5,000 for a lens, I may be single in the morning when that comes through, but I do like it. To add insult to injury, we've now got another piece of kit coming out from them as well. Hasselblad have released the 907X. It's the smallest bodied medium camera that you can buy, and it's in conjunction with the CFB2, which is a 50, which is a digital back for it. So the bit that you can see here, you've got the digital back bit at the very, let's go to this bit and I can point to it then. This is the digital back. That's the CV thing. This is the body. This little tiny little strip in the middle is the body. Which is kind of cool. And then that's a lens, which doesn't come with the body. So these are three items that you've got to buy separately if you want to use this system. If you look at these pictures, though, it does look good. The digital back, the first thing that we're looking at, is compatible with pretty much every Hasselblad camera that's ever been made since 1957 onwards. And the price of this, unfortunately, we don't know. But if the price is fairly decent, you could see this really flying off the shelves if people have got old Hasselblads that took film before this. The body itself is the bit in the front. Again, no price on that, but I don't expect it to be cheap. And there is no lens. You just buy one of their standard lenses. So they're going to start between 3 and 5K anyway. The back bit that you can see here has got a tilting touch screen, which is very, very good. I'm sure that'll be very high quality and give you a great representation of what you're going to shoot. 50 megapixels, so it's not bad at all. Rechargeable battery built in with a USB-C to charge. So they've really gone for compatibility here. And as I said, you know, I'd be saying brace yourself for what it's going to cost you, but that's going to be probably quite a large price if you do. There's the thing broken apart, and the body is the little bit in the middle there. So you'd expect that to be a bit cheaper, but it is an awful expense. And there's a picture of a pretty girl using it if you weren't swayed enough already. As I said, money no object, I would be buying this camera, because I do like the look of it a great deal. Muller's got his hand up. Muller hasn't got his hand up. Right, okay. No, I wouldn't buy you one. I'd buy myself one first, and if I had enough money, then I might buy you one, but I'm not going to buy you one without buying one for me first. Right, next story then. Hasselblad have released a small sensored camera. It does look great. It's a 50 megapixel CMOS sensor. It's their entry into the mirrorless world. At 50 megapixels, it's going to shoot some great photos. I'm sure of this. It looks stunning. Its ISO range is 100 to 25600, which is great. 14 stops of dynamic range, which is brilliant. 3.6-inch touchscreen on the back, which looks like it could be really crisp. There is a very high pixel count on that as well as. You can order it now if you would like it. It is the X1D Mark II, and you're thinking, okay, so that's going to be a pretty price. This isn't that bad. It's £5,750. So it's still a bit of a gasp, but it's not as bad as you would have thought potentially. And actually, if you go back and look at the X1D, I did a bit of digging around, and that went for over £8,000. Okay, so this is the upgrade to that, and it's cheaper, and it's a mirrorless camera that looks absolutely gorgeous. Again, I would like to have a go with it first, but this could be absolutely stunning. I really do like the look of this camera. Money no object, would I buy it? Oh, hell yes. Yes, absolutely I would. Can't see me getting one soon, though. Next one is the Agile Backpack. Oh, there's another picture, just in case you didn't notice. And there's another picture of a person carrying it next to a wharf. Does that make you buy it? Next one, then. Agile Backpack. Agile Camera Backpack. It's a new backpack that's been listed on Kickstarter. Nope, that's not it. That's it. It is 100% funded within 24 hours. So it was popular, and it's come from a firm that only do Kickstarter projects, the company that have it, which is a bit disingenuous, I think, but there you go. One of the things that I thought was really cool here, it looks a bit of a muchness, you know, from when you look at it on the front, but the side handle there that you can see on this one, oh, there we go, on this one here, the side handle there is good. I've got a Tenba bag that's got a handle on the side for carrying it on its side, and it's bloody useful. When I used that actively, the only problem I had with it was I could get too many lenses in it, so it got really heavy. But if you don't get too big with the lenses in there, those side carrying handles are really, really good. I like them a lot. It's not bad at all. I like the look of that. It's also got a gatefold on the side and a fold-out front, so you get like a much more space and access to it. There's good space in there. It's not massive, though. If you look at the GoPro that's there in the bottom right-hand corner of the picture, you can see it's not a super huge lens. And one of the things that actually kind of, you know, I outed in me head as being a little bit of a con was the DSLR that they keep pulling out is not got a battery pack on it, and it's a Sony A7R III. which is a tiny camera. So it makes it look bigger than it actually is. I do like it though. I think it's a well-made bag. It looks really nice. It is completely waterproof. So if you take it out in the rain, all of your stuff's going to be bone dry. And there was someone who put a review on, and they said, I had all my stuff and it was bone dry. $190 if you want it. I don't know if that's a bit expensive, I have to say. So I'm just going to go over here and get my bag. So this is my Katter Bumblebee. This bag I have had probably for, it's got to be 10 years. Okay. Let's get the picture up. There we go. So this is my Katter Bumblebee. It's 10 years. And if you look at it, it's, you know, you say, well, okay, that's marked there. But that's because I cut these bits off because I ate those band bits. But it's got a few scrapes and stuff on it. But it's not ripped. It's not torn. It's in really good nick. I paid £129 for that. Now, Katter were bought by Manfrotto. And Manfrotto have exactly the same bag. And I am talking exactly the same bag, just with red piping instead of orange. And it's more than twice the price now because they bought it. Are really disgraceful because I think the bags, I love my bags, don't get me wrong. I've got a bit of a bag fetish and I've got a problem with bags. I buy too many of them and my wife gets really upset with me. But some of the bags are way too pricey for what they're providing at the moment. And actually, if you go to the Amazon range, some of the basic stuff in there is dirt cheap and it's really good quality bags. Jake, who used to work with me, he got one of the basic Amazon Basics bags and he swore by it. And I looked at it and it was as good as any bag as I've bought. So a bit more space would have been nice, but it was excellent. Really good buy. So don't get conned. Kickstarters are all very well and good, but when you get it, you know, you are paying a premium for this kind of stuff. Right. That's the gear. Now let's move on to the questions. Four questions this week. The questions are pretty varied, it has to be said. First one's from Tom. He says, to test my editing skill in Lightroom, I make my adjustments, then I undo them and click auto to compare my adjustments to the software. Is this a valid way to see if I'm getting better? Are my adjustments similar? Also, if I click auto and Lightroom makes a very little change to the exposure, does this mean I did a good job with the original shot? Or am I relying on the software's judgment too much? Right, so if you take a picture and you click an auto tone, you don't know what the auto tone's sampling on, and you'll get some shots, particularly if you go out into areas in daylight, you'll get them go very green or you'll get them go very yellow or something like that. It doesn't necessarily, the auto correction doesn't necessarily tell you that what you've done is right. It tells you that what you've done, the camera thinks is right. And if you look at some stuff on a calibrated monitor and you do auto, you can get horrible haze and tints across it and changes in hue and saturation on it that just aren't accurate. So you've got to be really careful with thinking that auto is doing a good job and you're comparing yourself to it, Tom. I would always start with histogram. If you're not shooting in RAW, if you're shooting a JPEG, always start with histogram and look at where the mountain range is and pull your sliders back over to the first points for contrast, and that'll give you perfect contrast. And then if you've got that nice little mountain range where you've got the peak in the center, you've shot a very good and well-balanced image, I would say. If everything's over to one side, so it's too dark on the left or it's too light on the right, don't get too disheartened, because if you're in a dark scenario, like you're shooting a guy playing a guitar on stage in a bar, then even though that person's fairly well exposed, you're still going to get a lot of your mountain range over to the left because what's around them is going to be black. Don't judge yourself by auto. I also don't like doing auto because I don't know what it's actually doing to the image. No harm in doing a look-see and saying, here's auto, what does it look, good or bad, and then going back and doing the manual yourself because you're undoing the changes. But I wouldn't look at auto as being the be-all and end-all and God's gift to editing, because more often than not, I've found it's not. Best thing you can do if you want to test yourself is get a calibration device for your monitor. Get a Smile Monkey or get yourself some of the other stuff that's out there and get it on and just calibrate your monitor, and then you can see the changes that you make are accurate, yes or no. And you'd be surprised, because if you do your calibration and you see a massive change in your monitor, that means that no matter what you were doing and whether you were right or wrong, you were in the wrong position because you started at the wrong place. So the image is actually probably not going to look like you've done it on my monitor because mine are calibrated. Patrick, is there still a market for print photography in the age of viewing and sharing photos online via Facebook, Instagram and Flickr? Yes. Hope that answers your question, mate. I would say yes. I still make display boards. I do branding for offices and stuff like that, which is really, really good. And there is an awful lot of England lost, apparently. Thanks, Muller. There is an awful lot of stuff that's really, really cool. I still like printing out a few of my pictures to take to meetings and stuff like that. And I've got boards that I can show them on. And it's a really good way of getting, making sure that your thing's being seen. I also do like still having pictures up on the wall. So, yeah, there's always going to be a market for printing. Will future full-frame photography die out and be replaced by the cheaper APS-C sensors and smartphone photography? No, definitely not. If you look at a lot of people now, there is a definite snobbery towards buying full-frame, and full-frame mirrorless and that kind of stuff is also a massive market. So that ain't going to go anywhere for a very long time, I don't think. Is it going to kill the DSLR market? It hasn't yet. The compact market's died a death, but that was always going to happen because of cell phones. But cell phones are going to go a long way yet before they get into interchangeable lens markets and DSLR and that kind of stuff. Will it happen? Might do one day, but I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime. And a question from Ball Scott. With summer approaching, hopefully in brackets, yes, what advice can you give regarding travel photography, most useful lenses and kits to take on holiday? I don't know if there's an actual answer to that question. So if you want to go and do some serious photography, like a bit of landscape and it's low light and that kind of thing, you're going to have to take a tripod. Make sure you get yourself a cheap and light tripod. Cheap because the chances are if you're scrabbling over rocks and stuff like that, you might end up damaging it. Get yourself a nice carbon fiber one that's really, really light. Great. But if you fall down a mountain while you've got it on your backpack and you land on the leg, then it's bugger all. You should be throwing it over the cliff or into the bin when you get back to the villa. So get yourself something that's fairly cheap but fairly sturdy. £29, £20 will get you something from Argos that'll just do for your holiday trip. And actually, you can leave it there or sell it to the person that's your landlord or whatever. Don't bother bringing it home with you. Or even look out there. There might be something in like a Best Buy type place or a supermarket, Mammut or something like that if you go to France. They've often got a lot of stuff that's pretty cheap. Also, lenses. I probably wouldn't take a DSLR with me on holiday, mostly because I probably do it all day, every day. But I would take a compact with me, maybe. But I'd certainly take my phone. And actually, we went to France last year, and all I did was use my phone. Really happy with the images out of it. If you've got an iPhone 10, then you're going to be really, really chuffed. That's going to be more than enough. And it's easy to carry around. You've got it with you anyway. If you definitely want to take some lenses because you want to do some stuff that's portrait-based, or you want to do some stuff that's landscape-based, landscape photography, you'd want something from a 20mm lens to a 35mm lens, something like that. And if you've then got a bit of stuff that you want to zoom and shoot some pictures of seagulls flying around or something, then 70-200 is really, really cool. Would I be worried about going in between them? 24-70 is a really good lens, very utilitarian. You can get a lot out of that. But you're carrying three lenses around then in a bag all day on holiday. And that's just a bit too much. I wouldn't really bother with trying to shoot much stuff on that. I'd just stick to my phone and maybe take a small camera, mirrorless job with a 35mm lens so you can do a bit of landscape. And last question then, Martin, what's the difference between mirrorless and DSLR? First thing is the size. Nearly all your mirrorless stuff is smaller than DSLR because of the fact it's got no moving parts in it. So you traditionally in a DSLR, you'll have the prism that comes down over the front of the sensor. And then that flicks up with the shutter press, allows the light through, and then it goes back down. With the mirrorless, you've just got the sensor there. And what you see on the back is a representation. And that's probably one of the points that you have with a DSLR, with a prism. When you look through the viewfinder, you're seeing what the camera is going to shoot, probably with about an extra 5-7% around the edge that you can't see. But you'll always get a little bit more out of a DSLR. Whereas when you look at a mirrorless, what you see on the screen is what you get. It's very WYSIWYG. So, okay, that's good. You get what you shoot. And you go, well, that's okay, because DSLRs, I'm getting something I hadn't shot. But sometimes when you get into post-production, that little bit that's left over at the edge can be really quite useful for centering or for moving into third points and that kind of stuff. So I do like that. Battery life is shite in mirrorless. All the mirrorless, because they're smaller, they have smaller batteries. Nearly all of the DSLRs absolutely spank them when it comes to battery life, so I wouldn't necessarily do it. Okay, I can't read that out, Muller. And Ben wants an extra question. All right, I'll do it, mate. Weight and portability, clearly. Moving parts versus no moving parts. So if you've got a DSLR, you'll get rated for 100,000 shoots, 200,000 shutter movements, that kind of stuff with the mirrorless camera. That's irrelevant because there's no shutter opening. It's just a straight view through the lens onto the sensor. In terms of which is better, although you haven't asked that, Martin, I wouldn't say that there is an answer to that, because if you look at the like I said, you know, the weight and portability thing on one hand is better for those mirrorlesses, but then you're suffering with battery life. So there's, you know, there isn't a wrong or a right answer for that. It's just a priorities issue really in your own head. Extra question. Any tips for teaching your mother how to use a DSLR? Any good books or YouTube channels recommended? I've tried to talk her through, but not sure I have the patience. Yeah, teaching your parents anything is not good. Teaching someone else's parents is always good, because they'll listen to you, whereas your own parents still think you're a child. So I'd avoid that at all costs anyway. I reviewed a book a few years ago, and I got asked to review it, and I said it was really, really good. And I'm trying to see if I can find it. Hang on. It's in my cabinet here. Just give me a second. If you want to talk about Photoshop stuff, then anything Scott Kelby is a must. Don't even think about anything else. Don't get Deke's Photoshop Bible, because that's a book you can slit your wrists to if you're watching it too closely. And I can't find the book, but I'm pretty sure it's down here. No, it's the Second World War in colour. That's not it. All right, I'll find it. If I can find it, Ben, I'll stick it in the Slack room and I'll put it in the show notes. But it's not, it was a book of the handbook. It was a beginner's handbook, and it was actually really, really good. It explained photography pretty well, and it did do a good job. I'll see if I can find it out. But Google, yeah, just go on YouTube and type in learning photography, that kind of stuff. And I'd bet you there's a Linda course you can buy for Christmas or something that she'd really adore, or a Udemy course. Give that a go instead. If you've got a question, then you can send it to BritishTechNetwork@gmail.com, and I'll try my best to answer it for you. If you've got any stories that you want in, because I do need a bit of help with the dock now, so please send me a story. We had two this week that were in the dock. One of them I've forgotten to do. But I'll do it next week, I promise. Thank you very much to the person that sent it in. Send us the stories in to BritishTechNetwork@gmail.com. I'll include them in the dock, and I'll read them out next week. And I'm going to try and do a weekly show if I possibly can, because Friday's my podcast day. There we go. You can get hold of the network at British Tech. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. And that's it, pretty much. We'll see you next week for the next photo show. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening.